accounts electronically using online banking, mobile banking, mobile check deposit, online bill pay, and more. First Bank, the one who's here.
In local weather today, showers are likely, partly sunny with a high near 52 degrees and south winds around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, a 40% chance of showers, mainly before 4 a.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 43 degrees and south winds around 5 miles per hour. And tomorrow, Thursday, expect a 10% chance of showers before 7 a.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 55 degrees and calm winds. In local news, the Federal Subsistence Chinook Salmon Fishery closed today until June 20th in the Stikine River. It's the eighth year in a row the King Fishery has closed due to low projected numbers. Tori Hauser is the Wrangell District Ranger for the U.S. Forest Service. She says it's important to close the fishery in order to repopulate the species.
In order to perpetuate, the salmon population, or hopefully protect the existing salmon that are in the Stikine, we want to make sure that we close it to the subsistence use right now.
The escapement goal range for large kings in the Stikine is between 14,000 to 28,000. That's the number of fish that biologists want to be able to spawn. This year's estimate is 12,900, which is why the fishery has closed for the season. The escapement goals each year fall under the Pacific Salmon Treaty, which was created for transboundary rivers between Canada and the U.S. The treaty ensures both countries see some keen salmon every year. The Stikine King salmon closure does not affect other federal subsistence fisheries in the river, like sockeye, coho, and pink salmon. In regional news, Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department Captain Dan Bird was named the winner of a state firefighter award last week. The ceremony had to be rescheduled three times, and yet the award still came as a complete surprise to its recipient. KFSK's Shelby Herbert has more on the six-month conspiracy to keep the ceremony a secret.
Courtney Morrison stands just outside Petersburg's assembly chambers in her Sunday best. Her father, Dan Bird, has volunteered with the local fire department for nearly two decades. And to honor him for his service, Bird's family, along with his colleagues at the fire department, went to great lengths to keep him in the dark. All the subterfuge started about half a year ago.
I was contacted around Thanksgiving to get this all set up, and so we were all on board. And
they planned the ceremony for early January, but then the state fire marshal's flight to Petersburg was canceled due to a mechanical error, so the department had to reschedule another two times. But when the big day finally came around, Morrison said the man of the hour had other plans.
I showed up at the house and he said he was going fishing tomorrow. And so then I had to call Chief Jim Stolpe and be like, hey, we have an emergency. My dad's planning on going fishing. And then he's like, well, you need to sabotage that fishing. So
Captain Bird did not go fishing that day. Instead, he was standing in the assembly chambers in uniform alongside his fellow firefighters. Then Mark Braneas, the assistant state fire marshal, called him up to the stand. And the jig was up.
Certainly one of the perks of my position to recognize somebody with this caliber. He exemplifies the core elements of the type of service-oriented leadership. His outstanding commitment to the fire service in the state of Alaska deserves recognition.
The Ken Ackerley Fire Service Leadership Award recognizes firefighters who showcase extraordinary commitment to leading their fire department and who have earned the trust and respect of their team. Braneas said Bird was chosen for the award for his efforts to pick up the slack left in the wake of heavy turnover. Petersburg's volunteer fire department has struggled to recruit and retain volunteers over the last several years. But that's not just a Petersburg problem. Alaska's firefighting force has halved over the last decade, and volunteering in general has declined all over the U.S. over the last 15 years. But Braneas said Bird helped make a dent in that problem, at least locally, by revitalizing the department's junior firefighter program, which went defunct after the pandemic. The program teaches local teens how to assist the department with basic ground operations, with the idea of keeping them on the force after they turn 18.
Finally, he accomplished all of this while still volunteering for the department full-time and demonstrating the outstanding leadership qualities that led to his promotion as a fire officer and engendering the trust to act in even higher roles as necessary.
As Broneas spoke those words, Bird's youngest daughter, Addison Bird, was in the crowd searching her father's face.
I was nervous to see his reaction, but it was kind of funny watching his face light up and be like, whoa, I was not expecting this.
I caught up with Dan after the ceremony. He had little to say about why he won the award, but he shared his strong emotions in the aftermath with his wife, Christy Bird, at his side to help mop up the tears.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, it's totally unexpected.
Love you.
I was totally in the dark. A little overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. Now the state fire marshal's office gets to put Bird to work. He'll join a small cadre that'll help choose the winner of next year's Fire Service Leadership Award. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
The Ketchikan Borough was scammed out of about $625,000 earlier this month. According to Borough Manager Robert Duran, the funds were intended for the contractor that recently completed turfing for a city baseball field, but was wired to a fake vendor account instead.
But at this time, it's a criminal investigation, so we're being careful about what is released out while they do that investigation. We do not know if the money has been can be reversed, but we're not the only victim in this scheme. Apparently, other communities, other organizations were hit.
Duran revealed the theft during his report to the Borough Assembly last week. He said a bad actor hacked the turf contractor's email account. They then located an existing email chain between the contractor and the borough and sent new payment instructions to the borough.
Wells Fargo reported that the vendor, not the borough, had been a victim of a cyber attack. Borough Information Technology Department has conducted a system assessment, and there were no evidence of a breach of the borough system.
Duran said the account that received the fraudulent payment was a bank in the United States. It was then flagged by Wells Fargo because it had received a number of transfer payments like the one from the borough, but under a series of different vendor names. Municipal governments across Alaska have been targeted with similar scams in recent years. A couple years ago, a scammer made off with over $250,000 from a Juneau school district, and an infamous 2018 cyber attack on the Mat-Su borough took them offline for more than 2 months. Duran told the assembly that the FBI is investigating the case and a claim has been filed with the borough's cyber liability insurance. He also said to expect periodic updates on the case. In other regional news, the Juneau Assembly approved the school district's more than $85 million budget for next school year at a meeting Monday night. The move comes after months of turmoil and difficult decisions as the district faced a nearly $10 million deficit. The approved budget plan is funded via city, state, and federal dollars. Superintendent Frank Hauser says it's a relief to get to this point, but there's still much work to be done.
We've got a budget in place now, being able to move forward for FY25, and it's just good to be able to say, okay, we're focusing on, you know, the next steps.
The budget passed by the Juneau School Board earlier this spring was built on the assumption that state education funding will not increase. Instead, it relies on cost-cutting measures like school consolidation and reducing the number of staff positions in the district. Last month, the assembly approved giving $34 million in local funding to the district, the maximum amount allowed by state law. But the amount of state funding the district will receive is still up in the air. As this year's legislative session nears an end, both the House and Senate have included $175 million in one-time funding for education in their proposed operating budgets. And Governor Mike Dunleavy indicated potential support for the funding earlier this month. That potential boost in state funding could mean the district would be able to revise its budget to save more staff positions. The current plan will eliminate nearly 50 positions next year. The district has to send out layoff notices to teachers by today. Hauser says it's going to be a waiting game with the legislature and governor.
It's all timing dependent, so we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, we just don't know what the legislature's going to do and if the governor's going to sign the operating budget into law, and of course, if there's going to be any vetoes as part of that.
Last year, Dunleavy vetoed half of a nearly identical increase in one-time education funding. He can do that because the state's constitution allows the governor to veto or reduce budget line items after they're approved by the legislature. And earlier this year, Dunleavy vetoed a larger bipartisan education bill that would have increased state funding for public schools on an ongoing basis. In other regional news, Alaska lawmakers passed a bill last week that adds several indigenous languages to Alaska's official list of languages. A version of the bill, sponsored by Juneau Representative Andy Story, was approved by the Senate and then okayed by the House last week. Now it heads to the governor. Earlier this year, Story, a Democrat, called the changes included in the bill an important step in recognizing all of the 23 distinct Alaska Native languages in the state.
This reflects the goal of sustaining and reinvigorating Alaska Native languages, a concept that goes beyond preservation.
The languages that the bill adds to the official list are Chupig, Tanana, Wetal. Middle and Lower Tanana were previously classified as one language, and the bill also expands and renames the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council. It will now be called the Council for Alaska Native Language. The council advocates to promote the survival and revitalization of indigenous languages in the state. The bill adds two seats to the council and moves it from the Department of Commerce to the Department of Education and Early Development to better emphasize the council's focus on education. In testimony earlier this year, the chairman of the council, Hune Lance Twitchell, said he supports the bill and argued indigenous languages need to be a bigger priority for the state. Twitchell teaches Alaska Native languages at the University of Alaska Southeast.
Alaska Native languages are the oldest living resource in Alaska. These languages are older than the trees. They're as old as some of the rocks, and none of us are qualified to make the decision that they should not exist anymore.
He said it's crucial that these languages are recognized as the valuable and historic resources that they are.
Every single Alaska Native language is sacred and irreplaceable. It contains concepts that cannot be translated. It contains things that cannot be replaced and that give a sense of fulfillment and wholeness and health to Alaska Natives and to non-Natives in Alaska.
The bill passed unanimously in the Senate. In the House, only Representative David Eastman, a Wasilla Republican, voted against it. A spokesperson for Governor Mike Dunleavy did not directly respond to questions asking whether the governor plans to sign the bill. And that wraps up our local segment. Stay with us for All Things Considered.
Broadcasting of the Tides on KSDK is brought to you by Muddy Water Adventures, providing reliable, locally run water taxi services and sightseeing tours on the ocean and Stikine River. For more information, call or text 907-305-0206 or visit muddywateradventures.com. Broadcasting of the Stikine River Level on KSDK is brought to you by Alaska Waters and 56 North, guiding visitors through our ancestral land since 1994.